with relation to sex, our body physically changes in its ability to respond and to be aroused and also to provide enough lubrication. So for example, the vaginal mucosa is very estrogen dependent. So without the estrogen there, the tissue starts to thin, it becomes less productive of lubrication, it's more easily damaged and hurt. So you have to be kind of mindful of all of those things.
This is episode number 584 with Dr. Shama Matthews. We're going to be talking about sexual health after menopause. This is such an important topic. It is something that comes up often in my age demographic. The people I work with are mostly either perimenopausal or menopausal. And I work with some men as well who are dealing with women who are menopausal or perimenopausal and also have their own sexual health issues. And so I think it's just important to bring this stuff to light and to really talk about the nitty-gritty. Dr. Matthews is a gynecologist and OBGYN, and we're going to get to her in just a minute. But I wanted to just welcome you back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you, I've written two books. The first one is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this book was written because I saw so many women who really didn't value themselves, including me, who before I did this work, I really didn't understand my value. I didn't know how to show up fully in my life in all ways. And that's what this book helps you do. There are exercises, 30 tips and exercises in this book. And Choice Points in Dating was a book that was released this year. And this book was written because so many people say they're not a choice when it comes to many aspects of dating. And in life in general, I think that we are always a choice. And how we look at dating, how we think about dating, how we look at how we've dated in the past, our patterns, how we choose partners, all of it is in this book, from before we date to how to know if it is your last first date. And both books are available on Amazon for Kindle or paperback. This week's tip from the Woman of Value book is step number 23, be aware of your tone. This is something that I had to learn the hard way. I grew up in a home that was extremely, a lot of yelling and bad tone of voice. And I carried that through into my marriage and my parenting. And I thought I was being a good parent because I wasn't screaming at my children, but my tone wasn't good. And so whether it's through parenting or through any of your relationships, our tone really matters. And so my challenge to you this week is just take a breath and be aware that your tone may still be really very loud without being loud. And so just regulate it, make it so that it matches the words that you're saying. Before I bring Dr. Shama on, I wanted to invite you to join Your Last First Date. It's my Facebook group. It is one of the only groups that I have ever seen that is a positive place of self-growth. When you're looking for love, there are a lot of groups that will support you in bashing men and making fun of men and saying to you, run away instead of giving you good feedback. And we don't do that. We don't label. We don't just assume things. We really encourage our group members to be curious and to develop good skills on the journey to finding lasting love. So join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Dr. Shama Matthews is a board-certified OBGYN, minimally invasive gynecological surgeon, and certified menopause specialist. She's a mother and a wife, and her goal is to help women of all ages maintain their own quality of life while keeping up with the day-to-day needs of their families and careers. Welcome to the show, Dr. Shama.
Thank you so much, Andy.
What are the common questions that you get from patients who struggle to maintain a healthy sex life after menopause?
I think the biggest misconception is that one's sex life is supposed to deteriorate. with menopause. That with menopause, that, you know, intimacy sort of declines, and that's just the end of that. And there's no way to help it or revive it or manage that aspect of one's health. So I think a lot of the time it's me trying to dispel that myth and kind of educate women of all ages about, you know, the fact that you can continue to have a very healthy and robust sex life if that's something that you want, and you can absolutely maintain that.
That's a big one, right? So that everything is just done. You've reached all your sex life up until menopause, and now you're finished. So let's talk about the education. And so what are some of the ways that you educate people?
First of all, it's kind of understanding what menopause is. And I feel like that's also a big barrier, because I feel like a lot of women don't really discuss menopause or talk about what they're feeling or what they're going through. And many find that their providers, their clinicians, are not actually receptive to talking about it either. So really understanding that perimenopause and menopause is sort of that hormonal transition that one goes through, starts about mid-40s and kind of extends into the early 50s. Average age of menopause is 51. We call menopause one full year without a period, but perimenopause, those hormonal fluctuations can start anywhere from 5 to 7 years before. So with the fluctuations of estrogen and progesterone in our bodies, a lot of things change. So besides having a lot of hormonal and body sort of symptoms related to that, with relation to sex, our anatomy changes, our body physically changes in its ability to respond and to be aroused, and also to provide enough lubrication. So for example, the vaginal mucosa is very estrogen dependent. So without the estrogen there, the tissue starts to thin, it becomes less productive of lubrication, it's more easily damaged and hurt. So you have to be kind of mindful of all of those things. So being aware of those changes, and then also being mindful of how to avoid them or fix them, correct them. I think that's probably one of the biggest pieces of advice that I can give.
Yeah, so there's less lubrication naturally with the lack of estrogen, and the vaginal walls are thinner. Mm-hmm. So there can be more pain with penetration. So how do people fix this? I know that you are a lube specialist. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about that.
Among other things. yes, I am. I am a medical advisor for a lubricant company. But in general, you know, you have to be mindful of that. The big thing that I often tell people is that don't push through the pain. If it's painful, and it shouldn't be, right? Sex should never be painful. So if it is painful, you have to address that before it becomes basically like a muscle memory, before you start to associate pain with sex and then therefore stop desiring it. So that's one of the things that happens with desire as well, is if it's uncomfortable, we don't want to do it. And that's a kind of a natural process. So a lot of women think, oh, I'm in menopause, and that's why my, you know, interest has declined. That's why I'm not, you know, easily aroused, and I don't have libido. Those kinds of things happen because I'm in menopause, but it actually is much more complicated than that. And many of the times it has to do with the physical attributes and changes that happen. So one of the things to do is use a good quality lubricant. So how did I get into this role of being a medical advisor for a company? The company's called Playground, which is actually a lubricant company that a sexual wellness company in general. One of the products is lubricants that were designed by women, keeping a woman's anatomy in mind. So keeping the idea that the vagina is a very complex organ. It has its own microbiome. It keeps certain levels of pH that's different than anywhere else in our body. And that you don't want to disrupt that. You want to support it and enhance it. And so especially in perimenopause, when we're going through those hormonal changes, you want to be able to use a product that is supportive and helpful, not going to shift things in a negative direction and make it more painful or uncomfortable. So the fact that they really kind of put thought into their product design is really what got me so excited about it, interested in it. And when we started talking about the, you know, the benefits for women of all different, you know, ages and different points in their life where they can have these kinds of changes, we we were able to sort of collaborate on, you know, the ideas that it's helpful for more than one situation, for a lot of women to be able to maintain a healthy sex life.
So what you're saying is that there is an emotional piece, there's a mental piece, there's a physical piece to
Absolutely.
Libido, to arousal, and that people can shut down. And I'm thinking also that in terms of even before menopause, like vaginismus, which can have the same effect, that the fear of pain can make you tighter and have more pain, right? Is there
exactly.
a similarity there?
Absolutely. And so, yes, so that's why I mean, you know, it's not unique to menopause, but that concept is true at all different points. So whether it's because of a hormonal change, whether it's because of vaginismus, a fear of the pain that's going to happen. And that is incredibly complex because there's so many reasons that a woman could have vaginismus. But there's also so many ways to work through it once you acknowledge and recognize that that's what's going on. So lubricant is just like one, you know, tip of the iceberg, one kind of basic thing that anyone could do at any point. If it's painful, it shouldn't be. If it's dry and comfortable, if you're feeling like it's, again, eliciting that pain response, that there's things that we could do to avoid that. From a perimenopause, menopause standpoint, being sort of aware of the hormone changes and being able to address it from the hormonal side is also another option.
There was a lot of controversy around hormones many years ago. My mother had been through hormone therapy, and then they found that that was really harmful the way they were doing it then. I know that there are bio, whatever it's called, hormones now. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's being done hormonally to help women these days?
Sure. So hormone therapy got a really bad reputation, a few decades back. And it wasn't actually a lot to do with how they were delivering it. More so, it was the media doing a disservice to a major scientific study, right? So it was a huge scientific study that involved thousands of women. And the data that came from it was very complex. Right. There was a lot of layers to it. It's very difficult to interpret scientific studies because there's so many layers, and you have to keep in mind all the different biases, the different things that they're taking into account. Does it apply across the board, or is it only, you know, it's nuanced to certain populations? And it became a big splashy headline. And that was the problem. When you go back and in the decades that followed that study and they looked at it, there really wasn't as much fear or scare surrounding the data that came out. It was really very narrow to which population hormones were harmful. And what we came away from was the idea that actually hormones can actually be very supportive and helpful in the initial stages of menopause, but depends on the person, depends on their personal risk factors, right? And their general health in overall. And then also how many years they're going to be on the hormones, the dose they're going to be on, and when they start it. So if they start it in the initial phase, it's actually incredibly safe. If you start it many years after menopause, that's when the benefits of the hormone shift and it actually becomes more harmful than good. So you have to weigh all of those things. And that's where it's really important to talk to a clinician who's comfortable having that conversation and really reviewing risks with a person before making that decision. We're talking about systemic hormones. So if we're talking about hormone replacement therapy, usually oral or transdermal, meaning through the skin, receiving hormones to kind of help your whole body. When it comes to sexual wellness, you can actually use a more localized delivery of estrogen right to the vaginal mucosa. And that is extremely safe. Meaning there have been numerous studies that looked at the safety profile of local vaginal estrogen, and none of them have shown that there's any elevated risks. All the risks that we associate to estrogen, whether it's heart disease, stroke, breast cancer, none of those actually apply to local delivery because it's so locally absorbed, and it's really just to those cells of the vaginal mucosa. And that's one of the things that many women don't understand that. And unfortunately, a lot of clinicians don't take the time to explain that. So I feel like, you know, everyone has this negative connotation about hormones, and that gets sort of like blanketed across all of the options available to them. And they should really be aware that these options are there.
I had spoken to somebody who was using the vaginal estrogen and dilators as well.
Yes.
So there's so much that most doctors don't talk about. And I remember even when I first got divorced, my doctor never talked to me about sexually transmitted diseases, about the ease of HPV being contracted, because men don't always show signs of it. I mean, there's a lot to know, and a lot that people don't pay attention to or don't even think about because they don't have a reason to. They don't, you know, because this isn't talked about so much. So I think the conversations are really important.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer.
When somebody's at a higher risk of breast cancer because of the BRCA gene, mm-hmm. either one of the BRCA genes, is it still safe to do hormone replacement therapy if you have those genes?
Yes, because BRCA, first of all, BRCA is actually not the most common reason for a breast cancer, but it is one of the higher risks of breast cancer, meaning someone who has a BRCA gene is much more at risk for having a breast cancer than someone who doesn't. But most women with breast cancer don't have the BRCA gene. So that's kind of an important thing. The BRCA gene actually puts you at increased risk outside of hormone. It has nothing to do with hormone exposure compared to general risk for breast cancer, which does have to do with a lot of other factors about our life that expose us to more hormones potentially. And that's even natural things, like when you went through puberty and first got your period, how many pregnancies you've had, if you've gone through, you know, any sort of reproductive, you know, medications and things, and when you went through menopause. So your lifetime exposure to estrogen, even naturally, has a risk towards breast cancer. BRCA is different because it's a genetic component, a mutation that completely, you know, bypasses the whole hormone exposure. So yes, technically a woman who has a BRCA gene is still a good candidate for potential hormone replacement therapy. Now, I always kind of separate that hormone replacement therapy and the vaginal estrogen, like I said, because it's so different how our body absorbs it. And what I can say is, for most women, even those who are at risk for breast cancer without BRCA or who have breast cancer, vaginal estrogen can actually still be safe for them. So that is a conversation worth having, again, with your clinicians about their understanding behind it. There's a lot of good data around it. And often what I will guide them to reference is the North American Menopause Society, which is now the Menopause Society, has a position statement that they update every few years that actually looks at vaginal atrophy, genitourinary syndrome of menopause, the changes that happen in the vaginal mucosa. And they actually look at the safety profile of estrogen in all sorts of women, vaginal estrogen specifically. And they have a specific review of the literature about women with breast cancer or at risk of breast cancer. And they've looked at all the data that's there and really shown that it's very safe to use. And again, it's me guiding a patient to kind of think about it and then maybe even bring it to their oncologist and say, you know, this is what my gynecologist mentioned. This is what she's referencing. What do you think about it? And making sure the whole team is on board. But that's another one that's really tough, right? Because a woman going through breast cancer and, undergoing all the treatments associated with it, many of them are sometimes put into early menopause, or the treatments that they're in actually worsens their menopause symptoms. And particularly what suffers is their vaginal mucosa and their sex life, their intimacy, their sexual health. And that often takes a really low, like, on the list of things that they're battling when they're going through cancer and everything that they're thinking about, that falls down, unfortunately, to the lowest level. And many people don't even talk about it. And you can imagine how that affects someone, right? Like going through all of that and then also then losing their abilities to be a sexual human, being a sexual being, like that can really affect, just how they approach life and their relationships. It's quite difficult.
Yeah, sounds like it. It made me think also of a lot of women who undergo hysterectomies and oophorectomies, and early on, they go into early menopause as well. And sometimes as a preventative, because they carry the gene, they might go through having their eggs removed, their ovaries removed. So I guess you would probably say something similar to what you just shared.
I would. Yeah, I would. And particularly if they're going through it at an age much younger than what natural menopause puts us through. So what I often remind people is that hormone replacement therapy is actually less than our own ovaries make. So it's not really meant to bring you back to a level of premenopause. It's really meant to buffer the loss, and it's supposed to make that transition a little bit smoother. But then the benefits are also there, where it can actually, in those initial years, protect your heart and your bones, so preventing things like osteoporosis. So there's benefits there. Again, it's a much deeper conversation. It's very individualized. I often will, obviously review a person's risk factors and their concerns surrounding hormone replacement therapy. Not everyone needs to go on it. And there are other non-hormonal options to help with symptoms as well. But particularly when you're thinking about it from a sexual health standpoint, there's not as much downside. There's not as much risk associated with it. And again, that's the misconception that people don't realize that there's a difference there.
Thank you for that. So let's talk a little bit more about arousal, because I know this comes up a lot. And I'm thinking, I know we're talking a lot about what women can do differently, but what about their partner, and how can partners support women going through this?
Arousal, you touched on it before. Arousal is complex. Right? It has a lot of components to it. It's not just physical. It's not just a on-off light switch, that you can kind of turn on as soon as you want it. There's a lot of psychological, physical, mental aspects to it that you have to line up. And so for particularly women going through perimenopause and menopause, I feel that a lot of those things are in and of themselves kind of not in sync, right? Because if you're going through so many things that are impacting your emotions and it's impacting how you feel about yourself, your self-confidence, your body image, all of these things, because your body is changing, you often have a different perception about it too. And so what can a partner do is, be aware of those changes, be open to kind of discussing that things may be different. And how can we, acknowledge that, and how can we explore that differently? I'll often, discuss with a woman that what was previously something that would arouse them may not be the same anymore. It may take more time. It may take using something like a lubricant or using other kind of methods and ways to stimulate and arouse. It may be different anatomically, as far as like what areas are more sensitive than others than they used to be. So being aware of that, and one, whether it's through self-exploration or exploring with your partner, what's different, being kind of open to those changes and really kind of exploring that a little bit is sort of the way that I encourage them to kind of look into it.
Yeah, that's a great tip. To explore together, to have awareness, to kind of normalize it, and to just be a supportive partner. And also for women themselves to explore on their own, because things do change. And with change comes transition. You've got to really go with the change. I was just thinking about something else that comes up a lot in this age group, is that many men are now taking Viagra and things like that, which is a very different kind of sex, very different kind of erection. And if we're dealing with a man who may not be able to orgasm because of Viagra, and a woman who's much more sensitive and has a much thinner membrane, what are your suggestions besides lube?
So you're right. Yeah, it becomes very complex as well from both sides when both partners are kind of dealing with their own, changes there. So lubricant for sure. I often will say, maybe explore other things, not just penetrative intercourse. There may be other things that can help stimulate and arouse, whether it's through foreplay or touch or whatever it might be, to kind of help both parties kind of get to where they need to be, even before, the penetrative intercourse part of it. Change of positions, and also being mindful that not everything needs to end in a climax for it to be a successful kind of intimate encounter, like to really enjoy it for what it is. And that it doesn't have to, result in an orgasm or climax necessarily for it to still be something that allows, to people to connect and really kind of enjoy each other. So taking that pressure off a little bit, and kind of focusing more on the pleasure part of it, I think is also very helpful.
Good tips. So that brings us to our final question, which is, what are your final words of advice for anyone who wants to go on their last first date, especially post-menopause?
Well, I love everything that you guide women to do. And so it's kind of mirroring some of that, I think a lot of it has to do with self-care and self, appreciation, and kind of really being able to not just resign oneself to a situation and to kind of really, seek out what is it that you want. So same thing for sexual health and menopause. If it's something that's important to you and, that sexuality, that intimacy is important, that you want to continue to thrive with that, don't take no for an answer. Like, seek out help for that. And, there are clinicians out there that are well-versed in it. And I often will guide people to that Menopause Society, their website, menopause.org, actually has a list of providers that are menopause certified that you could find in your area. And so talking to someone that's willing to discuss these things is usually helpful.
Yeah, I wish everyone had a doctor like you who could not only be as open, but as thorough and as easy to understand, because you really break it down into just, little bits of information that we all need to hear, but a lot of doctors do not share. So I really appreciate how you're sharing and the fact that you are so thorough with your patients, and you're out there with this website. So give us your website, actually.
Sure. It's drmatthewsgyn.com. And then I'm also on the Playground website, which is helloplayground.com. And there's a section called Office Hours with Dr. Matthews or Dr. Sharma. And there's, blog posts and information there, and an opportunity to ask questions.
Great. And you also have a special discount for...
Yes. Members, and we'll pass that on so that you can put that in the show notes.
Yeah. So basically it's a 15% off discount for anybody mm-hmm. who wants to order anything on Hello Playground for your first order. And it's valid till March of 2024. And the code is last first date at checkout. So the link will be on my show notes. Check them out. And thank you again for coming on the show, Dr. Sharma Matthews, to enlighten us as to what's possible in perimenopause and menopause and postmenopause, and to dispel a lot of myths, because I think when people have better information, they have healthier lives, and you're certainly contributing to helping us do that.
Thank you so much for having me on, Sandy. I really appreciate it.
And thanks everybody for listening today. If you love our show, please give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And as always, here's to your last first date.
If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.